Julia Oversloot-Berg, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Of course. And back in 1975, your parents were awarded the Yad Vashem Righteous Among the Nations Medal. Why were they given that honor, and what does it mean?
It is a medal that is provided to people that have been investigated and found out to actually save a Jewish person's life during World War II. And they did it for no profit, just out of sheer heart, and it was the right thing to do.
And before we get into the details and the larger story of how your parents saved two Jewish people, tell me about your parents. Who were they? What were they like?
Well, my mom and dad are just typical Dutch people. They grew up actually quite poor. My father was the main breadwinner at 10 years old. My mother started earning a living at 11, and so they knew responsibility very early in their life.
And where were they living during the war?
They were living in The Hague at 20 Mikwalstraat, and it's kind of a zigzag street with a little park, and they have a cigar store where a lot of the soldiers used to hang out, so that's kind of important as the story goes on.
During the war, your father, Jacob, worked for a department store, and through that job, he met Leo, the Jewish man that your parents would eventually save, along with Leo's wife, who was named Emmy. At what point did your parents have to make this decision to take Leo and Emmy in?
Well, because the department store had a lot of Jewish people working there, they knew that these disappearing Jews were going to death camps because they never heard from them. But they didn't know what it was. All they knew is they went to the east and they were never heard from again. So my father said, when you get your letter to go east, just take off your star and come and live with us. And so he got his letter on August 18th, 1942, and he was supposed to leave for the train for Westerbork at 8 o'clock, and he left at 7, and he took off his star, and he and Emmy came to my dad. My mom and dad had four children then. I wasn't born yet, and Leo and Emmy had a one-year-old, Robert. I think at that time, they already had a place for Robert that was a friend of the family's, and they kind of had him there temporarily to see how things would go. Because Robert was the same age as my sister Jenny, and because all of my family were fair-skinned, blonde towheads, and Robert had brown, curly hair, he didn't look like an Oversloot, and so my dad said, we can't have him at the house. It would be a dead giveaway that you are a Jew, and it is too dangerous, so we'll have to find someplace else for him. And luckily, the day they needed to move him to another location.
And that's Robert.
Robert, yeah. Friends of the previous people had come to the house and just volunteered to take Robert. And they are Leo and Albert Munich. And they were just ordinary people. He took care of the waterworks in Rotterdam and The Hague. And they had a daughter that was 12 years old, and they said, don't worry about Robert. If we eat, he'll eat.
How close by was Robert to your family where Robert's parents, Leo and Emmy, were staying?
It had to be at least a 40-minute walk. They couldn't use the trams and trains, so it had to be a 40-minute walk. But my dad didn't want to know what the address was, that in case he got picked up, that he couldn't give away the location.
And at that point, he could have been, like your father could have been tortured into giving that information.
Correct.
And it's hard to even think of that type of situation happening today. But that's one of the many precautions your parents had to take.
Right.
What were some of the other precautions?
Well, we had family, and so we just told the family that Leo was a relative. Well, with my mother's family, it was my dad's brother. And with my father's family was my mother's brother, so we called them aunt and uncle, and the children didn't know any different, and they didn't know what a Jew was, purposely, that they couldn't give anything away. And then my dad and Leo went to the same tailor and eyeglass maker and barber, and they kind of looked alike because they were wearing the same clothes and had the same eyeglasses. So they kind of looked like brothers, and so the neighbors weren't too worried about it or didn't question it much. And also in that time, Rotterdam was bombed, and I think 83,000 people were displaced. And so it wasn't unusual to have more than one family in a house. And so it just made sense.
How important was it to not raise red flags? Or, I mean, how easy would it be for a neighbor to get the wrong impression?
Well, we found out after the war, but what they did with all the traitors who helped the Nazis, they had trials, and they actually, if they were guilty, they shaved their heads and paraded them around the streets of The Hague and then sent them home. And from that, my sister Jeanette said that there were two traitors right on our street, one by the park and one right across the street above the three garages.
So those traitors were reporting Jewish people in hiding?
Yes.
And then was that the Dutch government who then punished them later?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was after the war.
Were there other close calls?
The other thing, my dad and Leo were very smart about being cautious, and they tried to do the normal things you would normally do, that you had a tan, that you didn't look all white. And when they walked on the streets, my dad and Leo would walk in front of the women, and they'd have another couple in between, that if the Gestapo picked up my father and Leo, that my mother and Emmy could see that, and then they could go in another direction and save themselves.
Along with the physical danger, the mortal danger of being discovered, there was also a lot of adversity regarding the amount of food that was available. I mean, it was a big deal for your parents, who already had several children to feed, to then feed two adults. Take me through that situation.
Well, rationing at the beginning of the war was like 2,000 calories per person. But by the end of the war, when it was the hunger winter, it was 500 calories per person, and nobody could live on that. So you had to supplement the food supply. The identification cards that each person received at the beginning of the war had photographs and a thumbprint. And we got forged identification cards for Emmy and Leo, but the thumbprint is something you couldn't duplicate. And you had to use your thumbprint for the rationing. So we could not use that for the food. And that's why we had to supplement it with what was on the black market. And my dad said that if the German soldiers weren't so hungry for Dutch gin, there probably wouldn't have been as much food on the black market. They would trade for food for the Dutch gin. And they needed the gin because they found what they had to do was appalling and couldn't really survive sanely through that.
And so how many years did Leo and Emmy live with your parents?
Well, from August, I think it's 18th, 1942, until liberation, which was May 5th, 1945. That was when everybody celebrated that. Actually, it was the Canadians that liberated Holland. And Robert recalls seeing a half track coming down the street and shooting everyone, a Nazi, and the Canadians were making him go out of town. And my dad remembers that a whole bunch of German soldiers would take carts and baby carriages and take everything they could find of value to take it back to Germany with them as they were leaving the country. They also flooded, all the farming land is very low, but they flooded a lot of that they didn't want the Netherlands to survive, so they flooded a lot of the farmland, and they took all the trains and use them in Germany. So they had to start from scratch after the war. No trains, no trams. Farmland was limited usage. It was a disaster. And actually, it was so bad in the Netherlands that as they liberated people from the concentration camps, for 1 year they couldn't go back to Holland because Holland was not prepared to accept any more people and be able to feed them and house them. And they had to suffer for another year, and then they could come back.
The end of the war did mean that Robert was reunited with his parents.
Yes, it did. It was a marvelous thing. Of all the stories that I've read and seen, for these hidden children to have one parent or even an aunt was tremendous. And in the case of Robert, he had both his parents and his adopted parents. So for the rest of his life, he had two sets of parents.
The stories that you've recounted for us today, they're not your own memories. You were not born during this time yet.
No, I was born after the war. And Robert says, why is it me out of all the children that wanted to find out what was going on? And I think it's because it's so very important. My whole life, I couldn't even watch World War II movies. I couldn't listen to stories, nothing on television, because I knew whatever was there only is a tiny bit of the real story, and I couldn't handle it. But then after I was an adult, I thought, you know, I really need to find out what this was all about. Then we went to Holland, my daughter and I, and we went to Anne Frank's house, and I kind of broke down. And then I said, this is really a story that needs to be told. So then I gathered all the information my father had. I interviewed my sisters and brothers, and then I pieced all the stories together to make my book. And I was trying to tell people how real and ordinary these people stepped up and saved a Jewish couple because it was the right thing to do.
Sharing your family's story and writing your book have obviously been very emotional experiences for you. What's your ultimate goal at the end of the day?
I think it's important to remember that we need to care about one another, that we need to not be bystanders, that we need to take action and do something when we see something that is wrong. And if that message doesn't get across, then we're going to be in a very sad world. It's important that this message carries on.
And you have a brief passage from the end of your book that we'd like to share with listeners.
Okay. I wrote, what have I learned from writing this book? That human beings' will to survive is very strong. That when rights are removed, the level of survival decreases. However, people do what they must to survive. The ability to do anything against the Nazis were very slim. That blood is thicker than water, and people would rather die as a family than to survive alone unless absolutely necessary. The need for parents to keep their children safe is of the utmost importance. That every family member's death is devastating, but at the end, you must live for the moment to survive. Many worked hard to survive just to tell the story that it will never happen again. That absolute power corrupts absolutely is true. That good does not win over evil, but there is some good everywhere, that some survival is possible. It is human to forget the horrible in order to continue life, but we need to remember to talk about the events to prevent history from reoccurring and for good mental health.
Julia Oversloopberg, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.